So the parasha this week, Parashas Kisetze, as Rob correctly pointed out, it has approximately 74 mitzvahs in the parasha. So maybe you can do two mitzvahs a minute. So the mitzvah which I want to focus in on, we've spoken about before, but I came across it again through a medrash. But the pasuk is chapter 22, verse 6. Chapter 22, verse 6, a very famous mitzvah. Not a mitzvah the person necessarily encounters that frequently, but it's the mitzvah of kansipor, of the mothers, of the chicks, of taking the chicks and the eggs out of a nest, the mother's bird mitzvah. So the pasuk says, ki yikori kansipor, if a person encounters a can of a tzipor, a nest, a bird's nest, lufanecha, before you baderech, on the road, b'chaleitz or al ha'aretz, on a tree or on the ground, and there's afrochim, there are birds or beitzim or eggs inside the nest, v'ha'em revetes al afrochim, and the mother is hovering over, sitting over the eggs and the chicks, of the chicks and the eggs. So the mitzvah is, or the commandment is, losika ha'em al abonim, don't take the mother together with the chicks. Mm-hmm. Don't take the mother together with the chicks. So it's a situation where a person's traveling and he's hungry and he sees some eggs, some chicks or eggs inside a nest. He wants to take them. He's hungry. He wants to have his scrambled eggs. So, or his, chickens. So, and he sees these eggs. So the rule is, the pasuk says, the rule is, if you want to take them, if you want to take anything, you certainly can't take them together. You can't take the mother bird together with the chicks together. You can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. If you think you want to take just the mother bird by itself, it says no, because the next pasuk says shaleach teshalach haseim. You have to send the mother bird away, and then esabonim tikachlo. Then the chicks you can take for yourself. And it was the only option which really the two verses are leaving for you is only to take the chicks. You can't take both together, and you can't take the mother. The only option is just to take the chicks, alone, and that's only upon sending the mother bird away. And if you do this, if you follow these instructions properly, the pasuk promises great things. Leman yitav loch, in order that things will be good for you, v'harachta yomim, and you'll have longevity as well, which some interpret this means in the next world, either longevity in this world, but next world, but certainly it'll be good for you. The pasuk says, leman yitav loch, you follow these instructions properly, it's only going to be good for you. The instruction again is, you're hungry, you see some chicks, you see some eggs in a nest. The only way you can get anything is only if you send the mother bird away and you take the chicks or the eggs inside the nest, but you can't take them together and you can't take the mother bird either. So what is the purpose of this mitzvah? What is this mitzvah teaching us? So many commentators, many explain that this is teaching us compassion. It's about mercy. It's about mercy upon the mother bird, right? Because certainly taking the mother bird together with the chicks causes anguish to the mother bird to see its young being taken right away, right before its eyes. That causes anguish and pain. So the whole mitzvah over here seems to be, this is according to, you know, how some Mefarshim explain it, how some Rishon explain it. It's an expression of mercy and compassion upon the mother bird. However, you may be thinking about this already. The Gemara actually addresses this very directly and says the following. The Gemara says, if a person says that Hashem's mercy is so great, it's so plentiful that it even extends to the bird's nest, silence him. If a person says that so great is Hashem's mercy that it's even for the animals, it's even for the birds, for the mother bird, it's even for the animals, silence such a person, because it's not true. And the Gemara says two reasons why it's not true. Number one, because you should silence him, the Gemara says. You should silence him. Why should you silence him? Because if a person goes around saying that Hashem has mercy even for these chicks over here, for this mother bird, so then it's going to create jealousy among the animal kingdom. It's going to create jealousy in the animal kingdom. Why only these animals is he having mercy for? Why not other birds? Why not other animals? So if a person says Hashem's mercy is even upon the nest, even upon the mother's bird, silence him, because it's going to create jealousy in the Maisa Bereshis, in the animal kingdom. A strange thing, but that's what the Gemara says. And the other reason why you have to silence him, the Gemara says, is because really it's not true. It's not because of mercy. It's actually not because of mercy, the Gemara says. Because to say that this mitzvah is because Hashem has mercy upon the animals, upon the bird, is flatly not true, because mitzvahs are not based upon human emotions. They're not motivated by Hashem based upon human emotions. They're decrees from Hashem. They are decrees of Hashem, and that's why we have to do them. Nothing to do with mercy. So the Gemara says, as a second answer, it's not because of mercy. It's because it's a decree. You can't attribute mercy to this commandment over here. The Rambam though says it is because of mercy. The Rambam says it is because of mercy. Not only that, the Rambam says that it's mercy upon the animals. It's mercy upon the bird, because birds have feelings, animals have feelings. The Rambam says it is because it's causing pain. So how does he say that in face of the Gemara? So the Rambam says because we don't rule like that second opinion, right? There's two opinions in the Gemara. Mm-hmm. The first opinion in the Gemara is the reason why you silence a person who says that Hashem's mercy is upon the mother bird. The reason why you silence him is because you shouldn't create jealousy among the animal in the animal kingdom. Right, which implies, therefore, that it is because of mercy, but you shouldn't say that because it's going to create jealousy. But it really is because of mercy. The second answer said yes. The second answer said it's not because of mercy. The Rambam, who says that animals have feelings and it's going to cause pain to the mother bird, is siding with that first opinion in the Gemara that says the reason is because of mercy. And that's how the Rambam says it's because of mercy on the animal, on the mother bird, notwithstanding the second opinion of the Gemara. But again, the first opinion of the Gemara says it's because of mercy. And the Rambam says that. The Ramban also says the same thing. Nachmanides agrees with that. He said the reason for this mitzvah is because of mercy. It's because of mercy. The only difference is between the Rambam and the Ramban. Maimonides says it's because Hashem has mercy upon the mother bird. He's compassionate towards the mother bird. It feels pain, and you have to have compassion for the mother bird because it's feeling pain. Nachmanides looks at it slightly differently. He says, not because Hashem has mercy upon the mother bird, but it's in order to teach us mercy. To teach us mercy, not because per se the animal has emotions and feelings. We have to be concerned about the emotions and feelings of the animal, but from our perspective, causing pain to another, whether it be an animal or a human being, is not good for us. It's teaching us cruelty. We're getting used to cruelty. So Nachmanides says the purpose of this mitzvah, the motivation behind this mitzvah, is in order to instill in us, inside of us, mercy and compassion, and we shouldn't develop traits of cruelty, and that's why we have this commandment. But they both agree, Rambam and Ramban both agree, that the idea is mercy. They both agree the idea is mercy. The Rambam says it's because Hashem has mercy upon the animals, and you have to have mercy upon the animals. Nothing to do with teaching us the trait of mercy, because intrinsically the animals have feelings and they suffer pain, and therefore you have to act accordingly according to this mitzvah. The Ramban says it's not because of the compassion for the animal per se, it's in order to teach us mercy, that we have to behave in ways which are not cruel, and taking the mother bird away or taking them together would be an act of cruelty, would be symbolic or represent an act of cruelty. We can't do that, to teach us mercy. But everyone agrees mercy, 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 mercy. And again, that's indifference to the second opinion in the Gemara. So I'm just explaining the technicality of this. It's a machlokus in the Gemara. Opinion number one talks about mercy. Opinion number two says not mercy. Rambam and Ramban go with the first opinion, mercy. So you can go home and safely say that if someone asks you, what's the reason for the mitzvah, sending the mother bird away, you can say unequivocally because of mercy. But then if they ask you further specifically what, you'll tell them the Rambam says because it's mercy on the animal. And the Ramban would say, to teach us the trait of mercy. And that's the technical part of the discussion over and done. Right. Actually, one more thing, the Ksas Sofer comments. It's actually interesting because the Pasuk says, as the consequence of fulfilling this properly, what does it say? It says, in order that you will have good, leman yitav lach, gives you a bracha. What's the emphasis of the bracha? So the Gemara says, there are three types of people whose lives are not lives. There are three types of people whose lives are not lives. Their lives are very, very miserable, the Gemara says in Pesachim. Three types of people whose lives are very, very difficult and very miserable. One is someone who is easily angered. People who get easily angered, their lives are not, it's a miserable life. It's a hard life, right? It's a hard life, always being agitated and getting angry at everyone. Highly delicate, very, very delicate, isterness type of, fastidious types of people. It's very, very difficult dealing with all the different kind of idiosyncratic experiences and things of people and also food and cold and hot heat, etc. Very, very, very delicate types of delicate constituency. Life is difficult. But the third one is overly compassionate people. The more compassionate, overly compassionate people, very, very merciful people, it's very, very difficult because everyone's suffering. Everyone's going through some kind of difficulty. You know, so a very, very overly compassionate person has a very difficult time with just hearing about people's stories and about life and about all of the challenges and difficulties. So the Gemara says that an overly compassionate person, his life may not be a life and not be such a an enjoyable existence. If this mitzvah is teaching us compassion and mercy, so therefore we need an antidote to that. And that's why the Pasuk says, but don't worry, even if you are developing a very, very strong sense of compassion and mercy towards others, I give you a bracha, you'll have a good life anyway. And that's why the Pasuk says, in order that your life will be good, it was don't worry about the fact that you're going to become overly compassionate and develop a very, very merciful and compassionate nature. Not a problem, because you're following my instruction over here, and I'll give you a bracha, leman yitiv lach, you'll have a good life, and arichas yomim, and length of days as well. So it's a bracha in the face of that experience that the person has when they are overly compassionate. So that's the Pasuk. The Medrash, as we are, we've been doing the last several weeks, the Medrash, you know, in its classic style, what does it do? Quotes a Pasuk and then digresses. So here we go, right? The very first Medrash on this Pasuk, it's actually the very first Medrash on the Parsha. So the very first Medrash, which is written in the entire parasha, is on this pasuk of Kansipur, of sending the mother bird away. So the Medrash says, Ki yikarab Kansipur, when you encounter a bird's nest, halacha. So the Medrash embarks upon expounding a particular halacha. A halacha. What halacha? What would you expect it to speak about? What halacha do you think it's going to speak about? What halacha do you think the Medrash is going to speak about now? Something to do about sending the mother bird away?
Right.
No. Bris milah. Circumcision. Right? A logical connection. A logical connection. Tinuk shenolad. If you have a child who is born, a baby is born, circumcised. This is a very obscure halacha over here.
Right.
A child which is born circumcised, what's the din? Are you allowed to do bris milah? Is there a mitzvah, bris milah, on this child which is born circumcised? So it already has some type of, I guess you'd say, a deformity in the flesh and the body. So it already has the physical circumcision. Is there any requirement, is there any din, any halacha of doing some kind of circumcision on this child? So the Medrash says, yes, because this is what the rabbi said. Tinuk shenol lemol, a child that's born circumcised, tzorech lahativ memenu dam bris. You have to do what's called covenantal bris, covenantal blood. Hatovas dam bris is making a prick to draw blood. It's called covenantal blood. Hatovas dam bris. Why? Because of the covenant of Abraham. How do we know this? Where is this alluded to? Because the Pasuk says, in the parasha of Bris Milah, it says, Himol Yimol, a double expression of you shall surely do Bris Milah, you shall surely do the circumcision. The double expression alludes to the idea of not, even in a situation like this, even when the child does not have, already has a circumcision, nonetheless, you have to do something anyway. Another explanation of the double expression of the two words of Bris Milah also alludes to the idea that there are two components in a regular circumcision. In a regular circumcision, there are actually two components. There's the Milah, there's the cutting of the skin, and there's the peeling back of the foreskin. That's called Priya, Milah and Priya. So that's also alluded to in the double expression of Himol Yimol. Reb Levi says that the double expression of Himol Yimol is to teach us that the mohel himself has to be circumcised. The actual mohel himself has to be, if he's not circumcised, even if he can do it really well, and maybe he's religious in other respects, but he never had a bris milah himself, he's disqualified from doing the bris milah. So three explanations regarding the double expression of himol yimol about bris milah. The first one is, it's alluding to the fact that even if a child is born circumcised, still you have to do covenantal bris, covenantal blood, hatovas dam bris. That's one explanation. Second is that it's alluding to the two components of the bris milah, in a regular circumcision, the cutting and the peeling of the foreskin. And the third is the moel has to do, has to have a bris milah as well, right? Logical connection to the mitzvah of sending the mother bird away, right? So, yeah, you, the Gemara continues, the Medrash continues and says, but there's also another halacha about bris milah, which is important to know, as follows, that lama tinuk nimol lishmona yamin, the Medrash asks, why is a child, why is the bris milah specifically on the eighth day and not sooner? Why is that? So the Medrash says, "Shenos in the Kodesh Baruch Hu rachamim," because Hashem did mercy upon the child to wait for the child to be strong, to have a certain degree of strength. Sheyehei bo kocho, that it has the strength to be able to withstand the bris milah. And maybe this is the connection, because the Medrash continues, "V'kasheshem sherachamov shel Kodesh Baruch ala adam." In the same way that the mercy of Hashem is upon a human being, upon a baby, only after 8 days does it have the bris milah. So also his mercy is upon animals as well. Yeah. Ah, now we're seeing the connection. So also his mercy is upon animals too. Gives other examples. Among the examples are, the pasuk says, "Miyom shmini v'halah," an animal only after 8 days is it suitable for a sacrifice. You can't bring if an animal is within the first few days cannot be brought as a sacrifice. You have to wait for the 8th day before you can bring it as a sacrifice. That's also an expression of mercy. It's interesting, the Marzu commentary on the side says the mercy of it is also that the animal shouldn't be sacrificed until it reaches its 8th day when it's strong and can enjoy life a little bit. In order for the animal to be able to enjoy life, so it's strong on the 8th day, so it can enjoy life a little bit, and also and also have mercy upon the mother, that it can enjoy its baby for a few days before it's being sacrificed as a sacrifice. But it's also because of mercy, right? That's what the Medrash is saying. Also because of mercy. So that's because of mercy. Another mitzvah because of mercy with animals also. You can't slaughter a mother with its young on the same day. Also out of mercy. And in the same way that Hashem has mercy upon these behemoths, upon these animals. Kach nismala rachim ala ofas. He also has mercy upon birds as well. V'nayin, how do we know that? From this pasuk, ki yikara kan tzipula fenecha, when you encounter a nest with the mother's bird, send it away. So that's the sequence of the Medrash. Starts off with bris milah, segues into a component, one detail about bris milah, which is an expression of mercy because it's only done on the 8th day, and that's our segue into this pasuk over here. Now it makes sense. Yeah, maybe. Like, you know, why didn't it just start off immediately with the halacha of mercy on the 8th day? Why did I have to go through the whole rigmarole of the whole, all these different halachas, born circumcised, and the mole has to be circumcised as well? What's all that about? So fortunately, we have plenty of commentaries to find answers to. Okay. And so the Kasav Sofer, which is quoted over here in the article Medrash, thank you again, right? The Kasav Sofer says that the reason why the Medrash elaborates so much upon bris milah, because if you think about bris milah, I mean, we're so used to it. It seems like the exact opposite. It's the antithesis of everything about mercy. That's, you're causing pain, and it's, you know, it's, you're causing a chabura, you're causing an actual injury on the child. If you cause an injury to somebody, you're liable. There's a very big penalty for causing an injury. Right, you have to have a special drasha to say that it can be done on Shabbos. It's a special drasha that can be done; otherwise, it's a malacha as well. The Medrash specifically speaks about this, and especially about a child born circumcised. The Kasav Sofer says, because it could be argued as in many cultures and, you know, medically also, they say that a circumcision is actually healthy for a person. There's a certain health benefit, so. If a person should say, yeah, so maybe we're doing this because it's healthy, it's good for the child, The Medrash specifically picks an example of a child who's born circumcised, where you can't make that argument. The reason why the circumcision is necessary is some kind of physical health benefit. It's painful. It's cruel, but it's not cruel. Why is it not cruel? Because it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, right? That's it. We're commanded to do so. The Ksav Sofer says the juxtaposition of these two mitzvahs is to highlight whether it's cruelty, whether it's quote unquote cruelty, or quote unquote mercy. It doesn't make a difference. It's all the Ratzon Hashem. It's all the will of our God. It's easy to gravitate and to resonate with a mitzvah of mercy like the Kansipor, sending the mother bird away, and all these other mitzvahs. Yeah, it makes sense. It sits with us. The Medrash deliberately juxtaposes that mitzvah of mercy, which is so resonant and easy to understand, with this mitzvah of Bris Milah to teach us, don't think it's because of mercy, or don't think because it's because of what you feel and what you think is the reason for the mitzvah. Ultimately, yeah, the Ramban says it's to teach us mercy. But ultimately, the highest reason, the real reason, is because Hashem told us to do so. I read the words of the Ksav Sofer. He says, Al mitzvahs Hashem, kachu. The mitzvah of Hashem is l'rachem b'mokim shuri l'rachem. It's to be merciful in a situation where you have to be merciful. Sending the mother bird away. Or the daveg b'midosav and cleaving to the ways of Hashem. Ul'his achzer b'mokim mitzvah. And also to be mean and cruel, quote unquote, mean and cruel in a situation of a mitzvah. Lasser Ritzona to fulfill the Ratzon of Hashem. V'hem shnei afochim min ha-kotzer l'kotzer. These are two opposite extremes. V'zeh kavonos ha-medrash. This is the meaning of the Medrash that is bringing over here the juxtaposition of the Bris Milah mitzvah with this mitzvah. L'chein ha-medrash sheba l'ore levaneinu. The Medrash is coming to awaken us and to inspire us about this idea that techilas adin benolad mol, to teach us this idea that it's all about following what Hashem wants us to do, not what we feel we want to do. It's all that's what it's to teach, that it brings us out. This reminded me actually a little bit of what we did on Sunday in the Shari Teshuva. I was looking back over this and didn't really emphasize this thoroughly enough on Sunday, but I was looking back over it again. And in the Shari Teshuva on Sunday, we spoke about breaking our desires. That was the subject on Sunday. So there's one line over here, which I glossed over quickly. And he says, Taiva l'sunu b'leva adam. He says, desire is in the heart. Emotions and desire in the heart, right? That's where the emotions sit inside the heart, the desires of things, desires inside the heart. And it's the shorish kalapulas, it's the root of all behavior. If you don't have a desire for something, you don't do anything. So desire and emotion and desire, this is all inside the heart. It's the root of all behavior. And he says the following, therefore, im yisakin ha-taivas, if a person corrects his desires, his inner desires and his wishes and desires, and he fixes them and controls them. Tachas asher kol yivarim yashar sum. Instead of his body following his desires, rather he draws his desires after his mind. Mm-hmm. Right? So what he's saying is this, is that there's a hierarchy. There's the mind, there's the heart, and the body. So if we don't control ourselves, we don't control our desires, what automatically happens is the body serves the desires. The heart is the root of all behavior. The emotions and the desires is inside the heart. So if we don't take a hold and rein in those desires, then the body just follows along with the desires of the heart, right? It just follows with the desires of the heart. Our mission is no, take those desires, take those proclivities, take those drives inside the heart, those emotions and those drives and those desires inside the heart, put them under the rubric of the seichel, under the mind. Mm. Don't make the desires and the emotions the ruling force in our life. Therefore, the body just follows automatically. When that happens, so then we're cruel when we shouldn't be cruel, and we're merciful when we shouldn't be merciful. Mm. We don't have any control. We don't have an ability to be able to decide what's right and what's wrong. Right? We can't follow these rules. The Medrash is teaching us everything has to be circumscribed. Everything has to follow the seichel. Everything has to follow the decree of Hashem. So that's controlling the desires, putting the emotions and the desires under the jurisdiction and the power and the leadership of the seichel of the mind, right? That's what the Medrash is teaching us, to control and to the emotions and feelings are not just, whims and whatever the expression is. It's not just spontaneous. It's self-control. I brought with me, right, this book over here. This is a book. This is the a book which was produced after the passing away of my Rosh Hashiva Zitzal. It's a fantastic book. It's like a biography. And I remember the story, and I was fortunate to find this. Like, there's pictures of him in there. I mean, people may have met him. I think you, Joe, met him once a number of years ago. So there's a story which I remembered in here, which I was able to find it, because I really brought this out. I'm going to read the story about him. It says the Mashkiach of Shimon Groner. Shimon Groner was the Mashkiach of the yeshiva, who I knew as well, who passed away many, many years ago. So he tells a story about their flight to Israel when Rav Hutner passed away. Rav Hutner was the founder of the yeshiva, and they were all Talmidim, including my Rosh Hashiva, of Rav Hutner. So he recalled the flight to Eretz Yisrael when their Rosh Hashiva, Rav Hutner, passed away. So the Bnei HaYeshiva, the members of the yeshiva in America, received a phone call from Eretz Yisrael that the Rosh Hashiva of Hutner's health was declining and anyone who intended to see him should fly immediately. A group of those Talmidim raced to the airport, arriving at Ben-Gurion Erev Shabbos in the morning. Unbeknownst to them, their Rebbe had been nifta, had passed away mid-flight already. They got off the plane to find a stewardess holding a sign that she was waiting to assemble those who came for Rav Hutner's funeral. That's how they received the terrible news, to see that sign. Dashed hopes, coupled with the realization of such an immense loss, delivered so heartlessly, caused all the students to completely break down in a tremendous outburst. Copious tears coursed down the distraught Talmidim's cheek standing in the airport terminal. All but one, the Rosh Hashiva of Aaron Schechter, my Rosh Hashiva, was nowhere to be found. He saw this. He wasn't the Rosh Hashiva at that point, obviously. So he was nowhere to be found. He saw the sign and stoically went to the baggage claim to get his luggage off the carousel. The Leviah took place in Yeshiva's Pachad Yitzchak, then located in Mattersley. I was hesitating because at this point in his life, Rav Hutner was the Rosh Hashiva in Pachad Yitzchak in Israel. That was the sister yeshiva of Chaim Berlin in Israel. So my Rosh Hashiva was the Rosh Hashiva already, acting Rosh Hashiva in Chaim Berlin, even though he was the student of Rav Hutner. So the Leviah took place in the yeshiva Pachad Yitzchak in Mattersdorf. They waited for the group of Talmidim, for this great group of Talmidim, and as soon as they arrived from the airport, the Tehillim began. Instantly, then, the Rosh Hashiva, Rav Aaron Schechter, broke down, crying bitterly like a young child for the Rebbe, the father, the Shoresh HaChayim, the root of life he had just lost. The entire Leviah, he cried and cried. The entire way to Har HaZeisim, where the burial was, he cried and cried. The entire Kavura, burial, he cried and cried. As soon as the Kavura, the burial, was over, the Rosh Hashiva's crying stopped. It was late Erev Shabbos afternoon on a short winter day, and the focus was now on preparing for Shabbos. The large group hurried from Har HaZeisim back to Mattersdorf and arrived harried and disheveled, walking straight into Kabbalah Shabbos, emotionally wrecked, but not the Rosh Hashiva. He received the Shabbos with joy and a smile, precisely as Halacha demands. The Mashkiach of Shimon commented that witnessing this brought home for him the Rosh Hashiva's absolute, almost superhuman control over his emotions. The Leviah is the Zman Bechi. Leviah is a time of crying, and thus he didn't cry neither before nor after the Leviah. The Leviah itself, not before the Leviah. The Leviah is the time of Bechi, of crying, and that's when he cried. And when Shabbos arrived, one may not cry, but must instead be Mekabel Shabbos joyously. You have to accept Shabbos with joy, and so it was. Incredible example of that control and regulation of emotions. So that's what it's about. That's what it's all about. It's about, you know, that's the juxtaposition of two very, very starkly contrasting emotions, cruelty and compassion. They both go hand in hand when they're necessary. Cruelty in the quote-unquote cruelty in the context of a bris milah, because that's the commandment. Mercy in the context of shiloh hakam, because that's the commandment. But ultimately, it's because of the decree, because Hashem decreed it. That's how it's supposed to be. So may we all, especially now as we go to Rosh Hashanah, right? Let's, you know, this is all about trying to, you know, control ourselves, to control our reactions, our emotions, and our what we think is the right thing, the wrong thing, etc. Always looking, what does the halacha say? Do I do this? Do I not do that? That's a very, very important way to approach Rosh Hashanah, to show that we're really serious and dedicated to following the edicts of the king on Rosh Hashanah.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question.